This is Issues 2024. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Dan Creed, Master Business Coach. Welcome to Issues 2024, Dan. Nice to have you. I tell you what, you're billing yourself as Danny from time to time now.
I am.
Which do you want, Danny or Dan?
Dan's fine.
Dan's fine.
Danny's the given name.
Okay. Well, today we want to look at consulting profession and that's becoming more popular every day called business coaching. And Dan, you are certified. I can certify to drive a motor vehicle, but you're certified. How does one obtain certification in their line of work?
Well, a business coaching industry has been around about 25 years only. It started out with a lot of executives that were retiring and wanted to share their experience. And then it moved to people like myself that were just street fighting, hard-nosed entrepreneurs to really be able, and what I do is help business owners and executives and entrepreneurs to set and achieve goals and achieve them faster than they could ever do all by themselves. So I help people with business issues. I'm a master at business issues. I could care less about what field they're in. I believe I could coach anybody in any business anywhere in the world in any economy. And I'm also a certified master business coach, which means I have over 15,000 hours of log coaching time.
Okay. We'll get into all of that in a few minutes, but I want to talk about a little background.
Okay.
Now, I know you have been living in Arizona for several years, but you're originally from Kansas, and you moved back to Kansas?
Yes. We are from this area. My wife is from El Dorado, and I'm from a little town down south, South Haven. And went to college at Butler County and then got into the radio industry and spent most of my years here in Wichita, actually, and Oklahoma City and Kansas City and Colorado. But I got out of radio after about 18 years and got into entrepreneurship, startups, and one led us to Phoenix, Arizona, where we ended up staying 32 years. And we came back home just last year to help family and just love it to be back home.
Now, were you a farm family?
Yes,
when
we were.
Growing up?
Yeah, we were a wheat farm. My senior class had, I believe, 16 students. Had, I believe, 5 girls, and I believe 4 of them were my cousins. So.
Okay. Well, and not a big town.
No, 200 people or less.
Wheat farmer, did you have to milk cows in the morning?
I didn't milk cows in the morning. I had to feed cows, and we had wheat farm, hay.
You know, the thing that I've run into over the years is I run into somebody who was raised on a farm. About 9 times out of 10, it's a person who knows how to work. They're honest and they're straightforward, and I'll bet you that comes in handy in the kind of stuff you're doing.
Well, I've worked with clients in 18 countries, and I talk to people all over the world. And the number one, I think, business trait for an entrepreneur is have a work ethic. Because a lot of people come in and say, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and make millions of dollars, and they don't want to work. And so I've worked with people all over the world at the highest levels, and they say, what's your secret? And I've been very successful. And they say, what's your secret? And I go, I know how to work. And I learned that on the farm.
And that's number one, huh?
I'm telling you.
You spent a lot of your career in broadcasting. How did you get into radio? That's always, sometimes an interesting story. Sometimes
well,
not.
Well, I'll tell you, back when I was a kid, my father was a rural mail carrier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was raised on my grandparents' farm, but my dad was a rural mailman, 80 miles of dirt road every day. And I'd go out in his old pickup truck every night and listen to AM radio, which is all we had, and I'd listen to what they call Skip. You could hear stations from all over the planet.
Yeah.
KOMA, which I ended up working for, WLS in Chicago. And all of these. And I said, man, those voices, that's what I want to do. And I knew the farming legacy has been in our family for 130 some years. But you know what? I didn't want that. I wanted to go to be on the radio. So I went to El Dorado to Butler County, and my journalism teacher is now passed, one of the great men in my life. He got me a job as a copywriter at KBTO radio, little bitty AM. Then we brought an FM on, so I wrote copy during the day and did an air shift at night. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up my next to the last station was the world's largest country station, KXY in Oklahoma City. And then we came back up here, and I finished my radio career here and then went into entrepreneurship.
I would just say we've got a couple of minutes here. Tell me a little bit about the stations and people you work with here in Wichita, because I know that our listeners probably will recognize some of the names and some of the people.
Well, I work with the great Steve McIntosh.
Well, that's a privilege, isn't it?
And I, you know, it was always great. Radio always had,
hey, by the way, you're buying lunch.
Okay. In the old days of radio, the great days of radio, I mean, you had so many characters in radio, you know. And we got to know people like Cecil Carrier, the legendary weather guy, Gus Grebe, the legendary voice, sports voice in town.
Right.
And all those people, we always got to meet the mayor, and we got to meet all kinds of people. Hooter Myers was one of the great morning personalities, and I'm not kidding. I got to know you and a lot of other folks, and we moved around sometimes, but we were all still friends.
I mean, you and I were in the same company for a couple of times.
Yes.
Did you also work at a place called Bright Voice?
I did. I was one of the first 10, 12.
Yeah.
12, I think.
Stan Brennan. And I worked there for a while. And to explain that, how did they explain it?
The brilliance of Stan Brennan's vision was that he looked at a touchtone telephone and said, how do we make that a computer and turn it into digital technology? And so we were one of the first in the world to come up with digital information and digital content. Which they created a technology called interactive voice response.
There it is.
And which allows you, originally it was one cause when you called the phone and it said, thank you for calling, press 1 for, or press 2 for. But we created a product called CityLine that you could call in and one number and then access thousands and thousands of codes of information on anything from healthcare to Elvis sightings.
News, to horoscopes, because I ran that thing for a while.
Yes, you did. News, weather, horoscopes,
and then
jokes.
It was so far ahead, but it wasn't ahead because it was obsolete by the time we got out of there.
Yeah, I traveled all over parts of the world. It was interesting because it was even the early days of the internet. We were talking about, hey, you won't believe what's coming.
Yeah.
You can access this now on your touchtone phone, but you won't believe what's coming. You'll be able to gather information instantaneously, and people will go, what? Because I make sales calls on news, all the big newspaper publishers, television stations, all the people that didn't have an electronic media at hand. And so we would then, you would create content, and people would then be able to, a television station or a newspaper would sponsor it, and you called into CityLine, and you pressed in a code from a catalog that you had, and you could get any piece of information you wanted instantaneously.
It extended the newspaper from the front porch to the media seat. And even when we were doing this in the 90s, the newspapers were thinking, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen to us?
Well, it was their strategy at the time to try to become an electronic media so they had some place to go, because news was always a day late. It was always, unless they had a special edition like 9/11 or something, you know, it was always the next day. So we could give them instantaneous news through that process, and it was so exciting. It was a lot of fun. We were groundbreaking in different industries using the technology, and everybody there was so brilliant. And
what was amazing to me, a couple of people who wrote the horoscopes. And finally, I got curious. I went, where do you find all that? Where is this coming from? I said, well, we're just making it up. astrology. Oh,
I still have photographs at home when somebody talked me into dressing up like Elvis and doing a commercial for the Elvis spotting hotline. You know, it was, where was Elvis spotted today?
Yeah.
Dial.
All right. I mean, let's go back to radio for a second. What do you think, Dan, was the biggest lesson, the most important lesson you got from working in radio sales all those years?
Well, I think it was the one thing. In fact, I tell a lot of my coaching clients that they ought to work a year in old radio. Of course, it's impossible now. But in a single day as a sales rep, in a single day, I would make 20 sales calls on a lumber yard, a funeral parlor, a Cadillac dealership. So I really learned business, and I learned marketing. And that was back in the day where intangible selling was the key. In fact, that's what the whole history of radio is intangible selling. War of the Worlds, intangible. You can't see it or feel it, but you'll listen to it and you believe it. You can feel it. We used to call it the theater of the mind.
Theater of the mind, absolutely.
You know, and that trickled down for me in learning how to sell concepts, sell ideas, sell feeling, you know, and communicate with people. And then it was, you know, it was my first taste of entertainment. Back then, we'd do a company station softball game, and people wanted your autographs.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just so much fun.
Just to illustrate how this works, okay, you're out there listening right now. You're listening to our voices, and you're thinking, we're both 6'5". We have broad shoulders, wavy hair.
Look like Brad Pitt. Except we're bald and fatter, so...
Maybe Zazu Pitts. There you go. All right, Dan. Hey, you're listening to Issues 2024 on the Odyssey radio stations. Our guest is Dan Creed, Master Business Coach. This has been so much fun. I want to talk a little bit about just exactly what does a business coach do?
Yes. Well, I could care less what industry you're in. I can work with anybody, as I said before, in any industry at any level. But what I do, I've mastered my mentors. I've lucked out. My father died young. I had to quit college after 2 years. But I had mentors that came down. I call them my angels. And they were pretty famous people, like Brian Tracy, who's known as the world's greatest ever in personal and business development. Zig Ziglar, I work with a lot. And other people you wouldn't know, but were just as famous. Campbell Frazier, which was known as the greatest coach in history. He's quoted at Harvard Business. But these guys came in and helped me along. And through my work ethic, I wasn't afraid to go read a book or be told to do something. Go out and do it. Fall on my face. Brush off what happened. How do I do it better and get up and do it again? You know, so what I learned is the foundation of business. Again, I don't care what business you're in, but there's approximately 14 foundational elements of business. They include things like clarity, sales, negotiation, goal setting, time and priority management, all these things that I believe I'm as good as you can find in the world at. So I can work with anybody. Again, I can work with an aerospace manufacturer. I can work with, right now, my largest client is a financial services company, $22 billion, and I work with a graphic artist in New York City. And I help them build their business. What do they want to do? Some people don't always want to be profitable. Some people want to do a startup. And I've been a part of 15 startups. So we were joking earlier, that's why I don't have any hair, you know. But I was part of it, and I learned a lot in those 15 startups. And so I help people not make the mistakes other people have already made. And there's billions of dollars spent every year by entrepreneurs who saying, hey, I got a great idea. Let's go do it. And they spend all their personal money. They spend everything they have. They make mistakes, and then they're broke. You know, and that doesn't have to happen.
Let me interrupt you there.
Yeah.
They go into this thing with the best of intentions. God bless them, they're ready to take a risk. But is it good to have an out plan in case it falls down?
First of all, in today's world, an investor of any kind, angel investor or otherwise, won't even talk to you unless you have a written business plan. If you don't have a written business plan, they'll tell you go pound sand because there's 58 others in line that have a written business plan. And a written business plan, even if no one sees it, I wrote one for my business 18 years ago. I still have it. I still peek at it. But the thing is, a written business plan makes you think about what you're going to do and really think it through and ask yourself questions that you wouldn't normally ask yourself. And sometimes when people start with one idea and they do that business plan appropriately with maybe the help of a business coach, when they end, what they actually roll out is completely different than the original idea because they go, ooh, that was a bad idea. Ooh, that's a better way to do it. You know, so you have to have that. The other thing, the second thing they want is that you've actually got some of your own money in it. Nobody's going to give you money today unless you have some of your own money in it.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, because that, it's like, why? And banks didn't used to do that. They said, yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. Here's $1 million. And the banks went, you know, in the 80s, fell off. And so it's changed an awful lot. But before you go into business, before you put your family money at risk, your own money at risk, we have a process called the three I's. We believe that everybody in business has three sets of eyes or needs three sets of eyes. The first one is the eye of the entrepreneur. And they're always looking forward. What are my opportunities? What's the chances? What are the changes in the world? Where do I fit? Then the second eye is the eye of the manager, and the eye of the manager is what did we do yesterday? What did we do the week before? What did we do in the past? So you can compare past to present. And then the third level is the technician, and the technician is the guy out there every day doing the work. Now, the problem is a lot of people are making really good money. I've worked with guys making $1 million that stay in that bottom layer. They stay in that zone, and they want to pay themselves as an entrepreneur. They want to pay themselves as a manager, but they get in that daily grind. And so after a while, they're working 90 hours a week, and no goals. Their life goes to pot. They just, you know, so what I do is help them understand on any of those levels.
Yeah. Interesting point right there. And that is that you talk about the daily grind. And frankly, even if you love what you're doing, you can get involved in that and you lose that creative where you want to do something. Hey, what can I do next? You kind of lose that because you're grinding.
It's the old thing, working. Working in your business rather than on your business.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to be able to work on your business. And a lot of times that's just ego. People don't want to give up responsibility. They don't want to delegate, whatever. I've seen everything.
Did the pandemic have an impact on your business?
Well, actually, my business grew during that period because a lot of people were scared to death and didn't know what to do. And in fact, I'm very proud to say that 100% of my clients during the 3 years, when I consider the 3 years of the pandemic, 100% of my clients had growth. And you know why they had growth, Steve? This was really a secret. The reason they had growth is I would not allow them to think negative. There's two mindsets during that period. One was a survival mindset, and the other one was a possibility mindset. Okay? And so I would go in every session and go, hey, where's your head at today? Because I'm not going to allow you to think negative. So while everybody else was, oh, let's just lock the doors. I work with one famous shoe store line for work boots, and their home office said lock the doors until we figure out. And I go, make them sue me. I'm not letting you close the doors. Because it comes down to dealing with what if, which was COVID and politics. What if COVID gives us all? What if the politics, you know, the government's overthrown? What if to what is? And what is what we can control. And so during that time, my client who had these three little stores, little shoe shops, they became the number one, two, and four store in the nation.
Yeah, and I understand. I believe what you're saying. I just tell you that when you have coworkers going in the hospital and this, it gets a little depressing.
Well, it does. I lost six friends.
Did you?
That had to pass by themselves, you know. But for those out there, what we found was like, you know, our analogy was that will your customers still need your product no matter what? Yes. And where are they going to go if you're not there? So I even told some of my clients, I said, let's go steal all your competition's customers while they've got their doors closed. And what we did, we figured out ways. I mean, we started calling all the customers and mailing them their new shoes. We drew one of those foot sizer things on a piece of cardboard, and they'd stand outside the door and put their foot down, and we'd go get the boots and hand them through the door. Oh. I mean, we did it, and they become the top four stores in America. But it's just thinking possibilities, wow. You see. What most people don't think of, Steve, is in every damn terrible period like that. The flip side of that is there's always more millionaires made in during that period of time than any other time in history.
I've heard that.
And it's a fact because I used it. But it's all thinking survival versus possibilities. Yeah. And that's true in life.
You've written several books. I admire that because I still haven't written one, but... what are the titles? Give us a couple titles.
Yeah.
What can we look for?
You can find it on my website, but my first really good one, which no longer in print, is it was called Bootstrap Business. I wrote it along with Tom Hopkins and Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for Your Soul guys.
Jack Canfield, yeah.
Yeah. And then my second really important one was called A Life Best Lived, a story of life, death, and second chances. And this got really picked up. It was a story... 8 years ago, I was getting ready to go make a speech in Canada, and I wasn't feeling good. So we stopped at the hospital. I said, "Let me just check," and they told me I had 24 hours to live, or so.
Yikes!
Oh, 48 hours to live, or so. So I had a triple bypass heart surgery, and what I went through with that, I wrote a book about, and it evolved into how to live your life best lived. And this really started my. I work a lot. With the men in prison as well. And so that's that one. And then the one that's been selling steady is called Champions Never Make Cold Calls. Sales organizations all over the world have picked up on this. And it's just really the modern day way to sell, what people want in a digital society.
Give me your webpage. It's our listeners.
www.mastercoachdan.com.
Mastercoachdan.com. All right. You giving a speech instead? You told me you're going to what? South Africa?
Well, I'm going to London, England next Tuesday to speak at one of the largest business coaching international conferences in the world. I do a keynote on Thursday, and then I just got an invitation to go to South Africa to speak, and I speak quite a bit. I did a tour of Eastern Europe. Right before COVID, which was kind of cool. It was a little fun. I mean, believe it or not, we spent 12 days, and we were based in Eastern Europe over there, and it was a lot of fun. We have no idea what we think old is 1700s.
Yeah.
I leaned against the wall in Belgrade, Serbia, and there's a sign that says this brick was laid by Roman soldiers in 748.
That's a different perspective that most folks don't have. We're running out of time, Dan. I just want to let's see if we can bring it down to maybe one or two questions. What's the key? The one key to success in the business world?
Hard work and possibility mindset.
That same thing. Well, that's two things.
Yep, it's two things.
So many people fall. They say, "Well, I've got a great idea," but
I know salespeople in any industry. I know salespeople who make one sales call every 10 days, and then they get upset they're not selling enough.
So hard work is the key. Then
I was ranked in the top 10 transformational coaches in the world. And everybody called me when that happened, and they said, "What's your secret?" And I go, "Well, I make at least 10 sales calls, closing calls a week."
Creed is our guest this morning. Again, give us that website, Dan.
www.mastercoachdan.com.
Dan Creed, Master Business Coach. That's all for this edition of Issues 2024. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.